Welcome to Beyond the Code, the podcast where we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, law, and society. I'm your host, Professor Letlhokwa Mpedi. In today's episode, we have a truly insightful discussion lined up, featuring a remarkable guest, Professor Arthur Mutambara. Professor Mutambara is not only a distinguished academic and thought leader, but also the author of a recent book on AI and the Sustainable Development Goals. In addition, he has collaborated with us on a thought-provoking opinion piece advocating for a special commission on the fourth industrial revolution and the necessary reforming of our legal frameworks. Professor, welcome to Beyond the Code, AI and the Law.
Thank you very much, Vice-Chancellor, for this unique opportunity.
I couldn't think of any other person, you know, that I could discuss this. Of course, you are not a lawyer, but you understand the issues, Prof. You are a leader in this space. But before we delve into this important discussion, I want you to tell, you know, our viewers and our listeners about who Professor Arthur OG Mutambara is. Yes. Let's start with, you know, where are you from, your education, and then we'll take it from there.
So my name is Arthur Guseni Oliver Mutambara.
Yes.
Born and raised in Zimbabwe. I spent 11 years in the villages of Chimanimani. Primary school in Chimanimani.
You're a village man?
Yes, very
just
much.
Just like me.
And then high school, Hatzo High School in Mutari, 15 kids from Mutari. Mm-hmm. Then University of Zimbabwe, right. BSc in Electrical and Electronic Engineering. Mm-hmm. And then I was also president of the SRC in Zimbabwe. Wow. From Zimbabwe, I got the Rhodes Scholarship, went to Oxford. At Oxford, I did my master's in computer engineering.
Yeah.
And then my PhD in robotics and mechatronics.
Yeah.
From the UK, I went to America, postdoc at MIT, research at MIT, teaching at Florida State, research at NASA. Then I worked briefly with McKinsey & Company out of Chicago.
Right.
So I spent 7 years in America, then came back to Africa in 2002.
Right.
Worked in the private sector in South Africa, then joined politics. Very briefly, and I was Deputy Prime Minister of the Republic of Zimbabwe, the country.
That's right.
The three of us, Robert Mugabe, Morgan Tsvangirai, and myself, were running the country for 3 years.
Right.
Then I left politics and now in academia. I'm a director and a full professor at the Institute for the Future of Knowledge at UJ. That is the summarized version of Arthur G.O. Mutambara.
Wow. OG G.O. Mutambara. Prof, thank you very much, Prof. And in Oxford, you were also president of the Oxford debating
Not union? The debating society, but the Africa Society.
Oh, Africa Society.
And my own college graduate union. In the Oxford Union, I was more of a debater than president. I was in the union very active, but I wasn't president.
Yeah.
I was president of the Africa Society and the Metton Graduate Union or Metton College.
Yeah.
It's called the Middle Common Room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. This is exciting. So, Prof, really, you're well qualified, you know, to be sitting in that chair discussing AI, sustainable development goals, and legal reform. Because, I mean, Prof, you have the academic experience, you have the policy makers experience, and of course, you've done it all, and the law of that, you know, we've done some work also together in terms of working on an opinion piece in this space. Prof, let's talk a little bit about this book, you know, Deploying Artificial Intelligence to Achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals. This is one of your latest publications in this area. Please tell us a little bit about it and what encouraged you to drive this write this important book.
The motivation, Vice-Chancellor, was to say we must link AI to human development.
That's right, yeah.
How can we use AI to improve the quality of life of South Africans, the quality of life of Africans, the quality of life of the people in the global South?
That's right.
You know, AI is so huge, it's a revolution. There's AI in the army, AI in business, AI in science. But my focus, my motivation was to say, this revolutionary technology, this transformative technology, can we use it to address our problems in Africa. And I thought the best starting point was the SDGs, the 72 of them.
That's right.
You know, hunger, poverty, water, sanitation, healthcare, education. So that was the motivation.
Right.
How do we use AI to improve the quality of life of the people?
Right.
And in particular, we are saying, can we address the foundational challenges?
Right.
Poverty, hunger, education, water, and healthcare. That was the motivation. And if you look at the 17, they cover everything. So I thought the 17 SDGs would be a good starting point.
Right.
That's why I did that book.
Wow. This is important. Prof, in this book, of course, you cover all the 17 SDGs. You talk about how deploying AI can help us realize these SDGs. I want us to jump to one of the important, all of them are important,
sure.
But SDG 16, which is about, justice, peace, and so on. Please tell us more how deploying AI can help us realize the achievement of justice, peace, and so on in Africa and in the world.
Mm. SDG number 16 is so foundational. It's peace, justice, and strong institutions.
Yeah, strong institutions, yes.
And we're saying when we deploy AI, we should be able to advance peace using AI. We should be able to advance the delivery of justice using AI. We should be able to build strong institutions using AI. Number one, when we say justice, can we use AI to improve the quality of the delivery of justice? Can we improve our systems in the courts? Can you use AI to improve the way we police our countries? So there are applications of AI in the justice system, in the police system, and in delivery of justice. And then when it comes to governance, our major problems are around transparency, accountability, corruption, elections. We can use AI to drive accountability.
Right.
We can use AI to drive transparency. We can use AI to manage our elections, to minimize fraudulent elections, to minimize the dangers of manipulation around elections.
Right.
So if we are organized, if we deploy artificial intelligence, we'll be able to improve the delivery of justice, we'll be able to improve the way our governments are working in terms of accountability, efficiency, and so on. So it's a very powerful tool, potentially, if we are focused to improve peace, justice, and build strong institutions.
So how do we make sure that those that lead us are not left behind? They get to learn about the importance of AI, because if it's something that us, you know, at institutions such as the ones that we lead, we work at, you know, are so knowledgeable and we can empower those that work with us, that we teach, but those that lead us out there in our legislatures are left behind, surely we will not go far. Yeah. So how do we make sure that we move with all this, especially on the African continent?
It's very important that we build awareness among the policymakers, the parliamentarians, the local government officials, the ministers, the presidents and prime ministers of the continent. So we need to make sure that those who are making decisions, those who are developing policies, are aware of the transformative power of AI. So awareness, training, continuous education, the academia and the public sector must work together to build that awareness. And if necessary, people must get into workshops and short courses so that as they make policies, as they come up with policies for education, for health, for industry, they are aware of the power of AI. So that is what we need to do. So it's very important that Parliament, the executive, the judiciary, our judges must be exposed to the basic elements of AI and also the applications of AI in their sectors and in the economy and country in general.
Right. Thank you very much. So far, I know you've been busy engaging with all sorts of people, you know, NGOs, you've been giving talks. How do you find, you know, our people on the continent, especially those that you have referred to, the judiciary, our parliamentarians? Are they receptive or is there resistance?
They're receptive, but the most people have not realized that this is a revolution.
Yeah.
What we mean by revolution? It's comparable to the discovery of fire.
Yeah.
It's comparable to the discovery of the steam engine.
Right.
It's comparable to the discovery of the wheel.
Yeah.
It's comparable to the discovery of mass uses of electricity. So when you say AI, think fire, think steam engine, think the wheel, think electricity. So people haven't realized the scope and scale of this revolution. But however, the also is an illusion that, well, it's so advanced, it's for Japan, it's for America, it's for Europe. No.
This is not for us.
But actually, sometimes this advanced science is more applicable and more useful to us, the poor people.
Yeah.
Because our lack of infrastructure, our lack of development can be an opportunity to leapfrog, to jump.
Right.
Let's go to mobile telephony.
Yeah. Yeah.
When mobile telephone came through, we didn't have too many landlines. We were able to move from no communication to mobile telephony.
Yeah.
We didn't have too many banks, what we call brick and mortar banks.
Right.
We moved from no banking to being on the phone.
Yeah.
So when I say
M-Pesa.
When I say M-Pesa, when I say Echo Cash.
Yeah.
Vice Chancellor, that is global best practice.
Right.
There's nothing in Japan, there's nothing in Europe, there's nothing in America which is as good as M-Pesa,
right,
as good as Echo Cash. Not because they can't do it, but because there's so many banks.
Right.
So the appetite to move was lower there. We had no banks.
Right.
So when Echo Cash came through, when M-Pesa came through, we embraced it.
Wow.
So we, as the moment in Africa, we have global best practice. Similarly, I'm saying, when you look at some of the applications of AI, if we are clever, if we're innovative, we can be the global best practice. We can be the leaders.
Yeah.
So our lack of infrastructure, our lack of development, our poverty could be an opportunity to jump.
Yeah. As they say, necessity is the mother of all inventions.
Exactly.
So we could use this as an opportunity.
Exactly.
But Prof, the challenge of the digital divide, where you find that there are people, even if some places, even if you have data on your phone, there's no mobile connectivity.
Yeah.
You are left behind.
That's a major problem we face. If we are not careful, AI is going to exacerbate our differences. The poor will become poorer and the rich richer.
Right.
That's why we write books like this, to say, let us close that gap.
Yeah.
Let's use technology to close the gap. Let us use technology to drive inclusive development.
Yeah.
Let's use technology to drive financial literacy, financial inclusion.
Right.
It has to be intentional.
Yeah.
It has to be deliberate so that we avoid that problem.
Yeah.
If we are not careful, the gap is going to be exacerbated by technology. But with intentional interventions, with Africans having agency, Africans being in charge, African understanding the societal impact of technology, we'll be able to manage that. But you have raised a very important point. Let us not put the cart before the horse. Before you embrace AI, you must have digital infrastructure.
Yes.
Connectivity, speed of connectivity, reliable power, digital devices. So as we embrace the AI revolution, remember, digital transformation is so foundational. Digital infrastructure is so foundational. You can't have AI without digital infrastructure.
Important.
You can't have AI without digital transformation. So we must ensure that in the poor communities, we have power.
Yes.
Electric power.
Yeah.
We have digital infrastructure, connectivity, and speed of connectivity, and also bandwidth.
Yes.
We then also make the devices available.
Yes.
And of course, the talent and the skills. So it has to be deliberate.
Yeah.
It has to be intentional.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a danger of the gap between the haves and the have-nots increasing.
That's right.
But also, there's an opportunity to close it using technology.
We must close that gap. Prof, can we legislate ourselves out of these difficult challenges? Can we legislate ourselves? I know I'm the lawyer here, but looking at this from your point, you know, of you know, as an engineer, as an AI expert, as somebody who worked in this space, you know, sustainability, to bring all of this together.
Legislation is foundational.
Yeah.
Legislation empowers and enables the uptake of technology.
Right.
Legislation allows the development of AI.
Right.
So we need legislation to enable AI, to allow the development of AI. So it's so important. However, your traditional lawyer will not be able to do it.
Yeah.
We need lawyers who are tech savvy.
Yes.
We need lawyers working with technologies right. together. In other words, you need an ecosystem of experts, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. lawyers, mm-hmm. the policymakers, mm-hmm. the engineers, the mm-hmm. computer scientists, working together yeah. to craft that legislation. Yeah. And this is why we wrote that op-ed to
yes,
talk about
yes. I'm about to touch on it. Yeah, yeah. We'll come to it. We'll yeah, come to yeah. it, bro.
So anyway, legislation yeah. is so foundational. Yeah. But remember,
yeah.
old laws mm. cannot enable new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
We need new laws
yes.
to enable yeah. new technologies.
That's right.
But without laws, mm-hmm. it would be very difficult to enable technology. But however, yeah. balance.
Yes.
Balance and balance.
Balance,
if
balance,
you, if
balance.
You have too much legislation, too many laws,
yeah.
you're going to kill innovation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Again, if you have no laws at all, then safety...
It becomes a
danger.
Wild west.
And there's danger. Mm-hmm. There's danger mm-hmm. there. Abuse and mm-hmm. insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
So... balance between legislation mm-hmm. and innovation.
That's right.
Very important that we yeah. strike a balance. But we need legislation
yeah.
for many things to happen.
Yeah. Prof, from a policymaking perspective, and I'm glad here I'm talking to a former politician,
uh-huh.
but Prof, you're still strong. You can still make a comeback, you know. But anyway, that is a discussion for another day. Prof, one concerning thing on the continent
yeah.
is that nice mix of young politicians. We have young politicians, but you know, it looks like when people now are ready, you know, to take pensions, is when now they feel it's time to become I must put it politely, you know, leaders and so on.
Uh-huh.
And we don't have that nice mix of
yeah.
people who are ready to leads with technology, to embrace this new, you know, digital age, you know, because this digital age requires tech-savvy leaders. How important is it to have this that nice mix in terms of political leadership? Yes, political leaders do get do have advisors, but we need that nice mix where people would grasp these things at the speed of light and would be able to move fast and take our countries forward. And on the continent is a big challenge. Huh? If you look at the average age, it's worrying. And how does one balance all of this? I know it's a sensitive issue. So the point I'm trying to make is that in this digital age, one requires, of course, experience, but also a nice mix of, you know, upcoming talented people who would work with the established seasoned political leaders and take our countries forward in this digital age. How do we balance this?
The key phrase is mix.
Mix, yeah.
We need a mix.
Yeah.
The old, experienced leaders, we need them.
Yeah.
The young people, we need them.
Yeah.
Because the old people bring in history.
Yeah.
They bring in
definitely.
Institutional memory.
Memory, definitely.
They bring in the ideology.
Yeah.
They bring in the consciousness.
Yeah.
But the young people
yeah.
are critical because AI is a young people's revolution.
That's right. Yeah.
Gen Z.
Yeah.
These young people can easily get into technology. Older people have a problem of technophobia.
That's right.
Give a young person 5 years, 6 years, a new iPhone.
Yeah.
They'll figure out how it works.
That's right.
But give an older guy, they'll say, hey, where is the manual?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Young person can play around with that guy. So in other words, yes to the mix.
Yes.
But insofar as technology is concerned, we need more young people.
Yeah.
Young people in government,
yeah.
young people on the bench,
mm-hmm.
young people in the city council and so on, and young people developing the apps, developing the technology and applying them to solve our problems. So we are saying there must be awareness among the old leaders about the technology.
Right.
The old leaders must use the technology, but the drivers of this revolution are going to be young people.
That's right.
And the creators of the economies of scale, the creators of the technology, the drivers of the economy using AI are going to be young people. So
that's
they need
right.
to be enabled by the systems, by the older people, but we need a mix.
That's right.
But that mix must be biased towards young people
that's
insofar
right.
as technology is concerned.
Yeah.
But we need an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Academia, industry, government, working together, being driven by a mixture of young and old leaders.
That's right. Balance, balance, balance.
That's the key word.
You know,
that's the key word.
We have a saying in my language that I'm paraphrasing now. The freshly cut branches lean on the older ones.
Aha.
You know, in the olden days, a cross used to be constructed based on thorn three branches so that wild animals do not access the cattle. So the freshly cut ones would not stand because they are still soft. So the old ones that are hard, you know, they would be the core. And the freshly cut ones, they would lean on the old ones. So we need that mix.
We are talking about synergy.
That's right.
We're talking about complementarity.
That's right.
They need to work together. Yeah. They need each other for maximum output impact.
That's right. You touched on the op-ed that we call Othat, you know, where we called for a special commission on the 4IR and law reform. Please summarize the key arguments that we make,
in this op-ed. The argument in that place is to say, listen, when we have new innovations, when we have new technologies that are characterizing the fourth industrial revolution, AI and so on, we need laws in place to enable the uptake, to govern the use of those technologies, to enable the innovations to take place. So law is so foundational to enable AI to take off, to enable innovations to take off, but more importantly, to govern the usage of those innovations. Unfortunately, law by definition is very conservative.
It is.
It takes time to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in South Africa, there has been a law reform commission place from 1973.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're saying, yes, it's a good platform, not good enough.
Yeah.
We need a special one, which is for technology, that says, we are sitting here as a commission. We are surveying the terrain. What's going on?
Yeah.
And then proactively come up with laws, not wait for technology to happen. Yeah. Mm. But this commission must be staffed by lawyers, or tech savvy, technologists, the policymakers, but in particular the technology people, so that we are proactively coming up with laws to enable research to take place, to enable innovations to take place. So the major input of that op-ed was to say, why don't we come up with a new dynamic law commission, balanced law commission, which is focused on technology, in particular 4IR as defined, and artificial intelligence as defined, and then that commission maybe can work with the existing law reform commission, but this one must have a specific mandate to say what we need in place for us to use AI in agriculture, to use AI in mining, AI in education, AI in education. What are the rules? What are the laws? What are the legislative
gaps?
So we were saying we can't just wait. And not only for South Africa, we're saying, in fact, SADC, in fact, Africa, and also globally. So we can start with South Africa because that's where we are, and say we have a balanced, dynamic law commission for technology. And then we influence our colleagues in SADC to do the same at SADC level, and more importantly, at the AU level and globally.
Right.
Because we need laws, we need legislation, we need governance of AI.
Yeah. It's extremely important. Now, while waiting for this commission, I hope it happens while we're still strong, you know. Hopefully, we also get a seat at the table and make our contribution. What are the possibilities now while waiting for this commission to be set up? Hopefully, it will be set up in our lifetime for the government, educational institutions such as the great University of Johannesburg, and private sector role players, you know, collaborating to address some of these challenges.
I think we shouldn't wait. We can proactively start talking and coming up with possible governance framework, possible guardrails, possible governance laws, and so on, and proactively go to bring the ecosystem together.
Yeah.
The academia, industry, and government, and start workshopping these ideas.
Yeah.
And we must bring awareness to government to say, you must not wait on the commission. But for us to effectively use AI in South Africa, we need rules. Rules for the road. We need rules and governance framework. So for us to be using AI in education, AI in agriculture, AI in mining, we need rules. So we must motivate that the government moves quickly. But at the same time, we don't have to wait. Yeah. We can come up with a governance framework, which we can then propose to government. How do we get that going? Bring government and private sector and academia together and start fashioning. And also looking at global best practice.
Right.
What is going on in Rwanda? What's going on in Kenya? What's going on in America? What's going on in Europe? Europe is a very good, interesting case. They got the EU Act, the EU AI Act.
Yes.
It's almost like global best practice. The Americans are not very keen on regulations. In the balance, the Americans have gone to let it flow, leave it open, less laws, let's innovate. Europeans are more careful. They say, let's have more rules.
Yeah.
Again, let's learn from the EU Act, learn from China, learn from everybody, and then come up with our own for South Africa, our own for SADC, our own for Africa. Let me emphasize why I'm pushing for regional and continental laws. For us to benefit from AI, we can't operate in South Africa. We're too small.
Mm.
And I'll explain why I mean by that. As Nigeria, we're too small. Zimbabwe, too small. Why? If you look at the energy required for AI, one data center is about 1.2 gigawatts.
Yo.
That's the energy required for the entirety of Zimbabwe.
Okay? Wow.
South Africa requires 30 gigawatts for the whole country. So the energy required cannot come from one country. Number two, the cash.
Yeah.
To do one LLM, one large language model, you need $100 million to just do one product.
Yo.
That can't come from South Africa, but it can come from SADC.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the talent.
Yeah.
To do one LLM VC, you need 100 PhDs working on one project. 100 PhDs.
Just one project. That's serious stuff.
But if we work together as 1.4 billion Africans with a collective GDP of $3.4 trillion, we can get the energy we want, the talent we need, and cash. Energy, for example, Ingadam.
Yeah.
If we work on Ingadam, Ingadam can power the entire Southern Africa.
Yeah.
So as we look at laws and legislation, yes to laws for South Africa, but let us quickly escalate to the region, escalate to the continent, so that we can embrace AI as South Africa, but SADC more important, and more importantly as Africa, so we can get economies of scale.
Yeah.
AI is about scale.
That's
numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Right now, just to dramatize the problem, AI companies in America are now coming up with their own power plants, nuclear power plants, owned by a private company to get the energy they need.
Yeah.
They can't get it from the grid.
Yeah, you can't compete with the general public.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for us, in AI must be understood as a five-layer cake.
Can you please elaborate?
Yeah. The first part of the cake is energy.
Yeah.
Without energy, there's no AI.
Yeah.
Number two is the chips.
Yeah.
The GPUs, NPUs. CPUs, these are the chips that drive AI.
Right.
The next layer is infrastructure, your data centers and AI factories.
Yeah.
Then on top of that are your models, LLMs, large language models, ChatGPT, Gemini. And then on top of that, you have now the applications.
What about water for cooling?
Oh, yeah.
And now with water issues we're having.
It's part of the energy dimension. Because actually, very good point you're raising. AI would demand a lot of energy and water for cooling.
And water for cooling.
And so, in terms of SDGs, AI,
doesn't it sound counterproductive against the SDGs?
In terms of energy, AI is the enemy.
Yeah,
because it requires so much energy. So much, but also you can use AI to improve energy. So it's a double-edged sword for energy. Very good point. Water and energy. So, but the laws we're talking about, the law commission must be established in South Africa.
Yeah.
But we must influence our colleagues in SADC to do a SADC one.
Right.
And then the continent one.
Yeah.
And then we can also influence the general, the UN and so on and so forth. But South Africa, SADC, Africa.
Wow. Prof, as we reflect on the themes we've discussed, what advice would you give policymakers looking to leverage AI for sustainable development? And based on this double-edged sword, because some will say, no, this is not for us. We already have water scarcity challenges. And policymakers say, no, this is not for us. It's for other nations, you know. What advice would you give them?
The advice I would give to them is that this is a revolution.
It's the future.
We have no choice but to participate.
Yeah.
AI is the economy. The economy is AI. The number one company in the world right now is called NVIDIA.
Yeah.
With a market cap of $4.3 trillion. Bigger than Microsoft, bigger than Apple, number one company in the world. All they do are chips. Chips.
Yeah.
And we are saying that AI affects every sector.
Yeah.
It's a revolution. This year, AI will contribute 10% of global GDP.
Yeah.
And this NVIDIA company I talked about is number four in the world. The only economy is bigger than this company are the American economy, the Chinese economy, and the German economy. All the other economies are smaller than NVIDIA.
Wow.
So what I want policymakers to understand is that this is a revolution because AI is the economy. The economy is AI. Now, I said 11% of global GDP. Generative AI, which is just a part of AI, will contribute about $4 trillion to global GDP. Again, one type of AI is bigger than the collective GDP of Africa. We are going through a revolution. Remember fire.
Yeah.
Remember steam engine.
Yeah.
Remember the wheel.
Yeah.
Remember the first usage of electricity.
Mm.
That's what AI is about.
Mm.
So that's my first message to policymakers. Secondly, you can't go it alone.
Yeah.
You need scale.
Yeah.
You must think about SADC. Think about ECOWAS. Think about the East African community. Think about Africa.
Yeah.
The Africans must unite.
Yeah.
It's more important now than ever for us to have integration of our economies, to have political unity, so that we can say we have 1.4 billion people working together. We have a collective GDP of $3.4 trillion. We must be able to say that. And remember, we are not weak.
Yeah.
All these technologies, that's a very important point for the policymakers. When we say AI, when you say energy transition, when you say mobile telephony, when you say advanced manufacturing, when you say defense electronics, they're driven by critical minerals. We as Africans,
plenty.
30% of global reserves are in Africa. When I say cobalt, 60% of world cobalt is in the DRC. One country. 60% of global reserves.
Yeah.
So why don't we leverage our 30% of critical minerals to play in the space of energy, in the space of chips, in the space of infra? Why don't we negotiate with Taiwan Semiconductor Company or NVIDIA to say, hey, we got some critical minerals here. Can we be partners? You know? In other words, let's leverage your minerals, what are called critical minerals. And within critical minerals, there are what are called rare earth minerals that are here on the continent. So as we try to use AI to improve the quality of life of our people, we have a lot going for us.
Right.
Our numbers, if we work together, our natural resources, our young people, talent. Talent. We got the talent here.
Yeah.
And also the opportunity to leapfrog.
Yeah.
That's what I would share with the policymakers.
Wow.
It's a revolution.
Yeah.
And you better take a plunge.
Yeah. Prof, we have all the ingredients to make this thing work for us. All we need is to open our eyes as Africans and work together and make it happen.
Vice Chancellor, this revolution in Africa will rise or fall on leadership, will rise or fall on African agency, will rise or fall on determination.
Yeah.
No guts, no glory.
Wow. Leadership, agency, determination.
That's it.
No guts, no glory.
That's it.
Prof, thank you so much. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I mean, this conversation has offered valuable perspectives on the intersection of AI, law, and sustainable development. Prof, I trust our listeners and viewers find this information enlightening
and actionable. My parting shot is this one.
Yes.
We must work together as Africans to improve the African continent.
Right.
To improve the quality of life of all Africans.
Yes. Yeah.
You will never be respected as an African until Africa has done well as a continent.
Right.
We must value collective success more than individual success.
Yeah.
We must thrive and succeed as a continent of 1.4 billion people.
Yeah.
Individual success, yes, but collective success is more important.
I agree.
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu.
I am because we are. Yeah. We are because I am. Let's go forward with AI.
And if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far,
that's it.
Let's go together.
Let us embrace African wisdom as we embrace AI.
That's right. Wow. Let us embrace African wisdom as we embrace AI. Professor Arthur G.O. Mutambara, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to share with your listeners and viewers.
Thank you, Prof.
Okay.
As we close today's episode, remember that conversations around AI and the law are just as important as the technologies themselves. Engage, reflect, and question the role of AI in shaping our future. And thank you to our audience for tuning in to Beyond the Code. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Join us next time as we continue to explore the evolving landscape of AI and the law. Until then, stay curious, stay informed, and keep pushing the boundaries of knowledge.